not only the last lecture of my course, but also the last lecture of the front-end courses. Or probably it is the pre-last, yeah. Yeah, yeah, you are going to have. So yeah, you're going to have. But simply, today is the last day for the front-end courses. And today I will talk about wave equation, then Green's function for wave equation, and Maxwell's equations, and the retarded potentials. Again, the material may be either new to you or partially new, so if you have questions, don't hesitate to ask. But first of all, let me make the following comment regarding the question that arose from the previous lecture. How to prove that the Laplace operator given by minus lambda squared is self-adjoint with respect to the inner product that is basically the integrated product of two functions. So the proof is very simple. To prove self-adjointness, you have to basically apply a Laplace operator to one of the functions and consider this difference. This difference is basically phi star L chi minus chi L phi star. So what you have to get as a result, you should recast this integral in terms of the full differential. So for the d-dimensional case, you have to recast this difference in this form, that gradients acts on some function. That's it. This completes the proof of self-adjointness. So the functions chi and phi star can be arbitrary. They can be arbitrary, and they don't have to obey specific boundary conditions. When I talked that they should obey specific boundary conditions, I talked about not simply self-adjointness, but true self-adjointness. These are different things. The operator can be simply self-adjoint, and the operator can be truly self-adjoint. So if it is truly self-adjoint, that we imply that it acts on the functions that obey some specific boundary conditions. But to prove self-adjointness, you don't have to assume anything about the functions on the boundary. So basically, this is a simple operator, and this difference can be recast in this form. After that, you can transform the integral over the volume into the integral over the surface. So this identity is called Green's identity. I don't remember either the first Green's identity or the second one, but it is one of the Green's identities. Okay, that's probably all I wanted to say regarding Laplace operator. Okay, let's move on. Wave equation. We're going to talk about the equation that has the following form. Lambda squared phi x t minus 1 over c squared d squared phi of x t over d t squared equal to f of x comma t. This is the equation of hyperbolic type. And requires Cauchy boundary conditions. Can anyone remind me what Cauchy boundary conditions are? Huh? Yeah, exactly. The function on the boundary itself and its derivative. So the boundary can include both space and time. So the derivative must be with respect to spatial coordinates and time coordinates. So first consider homogeneous wave equation. and assume that we are working in the full space. So, and assume X belonging to the full space. And we specify initial boundary conditions. Basically, the spatial coordinates run from minus infinity to infinity, and we must specify the initial conditions, assume initial conditions. Phi of x comma zero equal to some function u naught of x and d phi x comma zero over dt equal to some function v naught of x. So functions u naught of x and v naught of x are presumed to be Fourier transformable. They decay fast enough at infinity, so they are regular functions, good enough to admit the Fourier transform. So how are we going to attack this problem knowing that the right-hand side is zero? Well, the answer should be pretty much clear by now, right? We Fourier transform phi and Fourier transform the initial conditions. Fourier transform phi of x and t. We Fourier transform with respect to spatial coordinates only. Integral over the whole space phi k comma t e in power minus I k dot x dk over 2 pi in power d. And the same for u naught and v naught. So I will write again this way here, write u naught of x, v naught of x, just to save time writing one and the same things. U naught of k, v naught of k. Right, if we Fourier transform both the field we would like to determine and the initial conditions. So, and substitute the Fourier transformed fields into our equation. So we're going to have 1 over c squared d2 phi k t divided by dt squared plus k squared phi k comma t equal to 0. It is essential that we have plus here because when we take nabla squared, it gives I squared k squared. So we have plus here, and we have to determine the solution to this differential equation that contains the derivative with respect to time only. So hence the most general solution is phi of k comma t equal to some constant a that should be, yeah, if you have any questions, just ask me immediately. A of k times I in power c k t plus b of k in power I minus I c k t. What is k? K is just the absolute value of the vector k. because we consider multidimensional case. Or sometimes people write down, introduce the frequency omega k equal to c times absolute value of k. But we're going to write this way. So what we have essentially done, we have done the spectral expansion. This is nothing else than the spectral expansion. We have two unknown functions of k only, a and b, that should be determined from our initial conditions. So we put t equal to zero and compare with the Fourier components of u naught and v naught. So we have phi k comma zero equal to a of k plus b of k, and this should be equal to u naught of k. Then we differentiate with respect to time and get one more equation that connects ak and bk. d phi over dt d phi of k over dt at the moment of time equal to zero will be equal to I c k a of k minus I c k b of k, and this is equal to v naught of k. So these two equations allow us to determine a of k and b of k as functions of u naught of k and v naught of k. So the solution is a of k equal to 1/2 u naught of k plus 1 over I c k v naught of k. And b of k will be 1/2 u naught of k minus 1 over I c k v naught of k. So any questions? This is just the solution of the system of equations. So this means, so this solution means that we can write down the solution to the homogeneous wave equation without the right hand side in the following form, equal to 1/2 integral over whole space u naught of k plus u naught of k divided by I c k e in power I c k t minus I vector k dot vector x integrated over dk divided by 2 pi in power d plus 1/2 again integral over k space u naught of k minus this time minus v naught of k divided by I c k and exponent containing minus I c k t minus I k dot x dk divided by 2 pi in power d. So this is the most general solution satisfying initial conditions. initial conditions. We could say, of course, boundary conditions, because the boundary includes time variable as well. Questions, comments? So this is a very general solution, and this formula is valid in arbitrary dimension. However, in one dimension, this formula can be considerably simplified. So it's a good exercise show that in d equal to 1, we have phi of x of t equal to 1/2. 1/2 times u naught of x plus ct plus u naught of x minus ct plus 1 over 2c times the integral x minus ct to x plus ct, v naught of psi d psi. So this formula is the famous D'Alembert solution. So this part follows straightforwardly, and concerning the part with derivatives, you have to work just a little bit. Because here what stands, this k is the absolute value of k, so you should be extra accurate when you consider one-dimensional case. So in fact, historically, the wave equation was solved for one-dimensional case, not by Fourier method, but by other methods. And this formula was the first formula that was obtained as a solution of a one-dimensional homogeneous wave equation. Any questions? So if there are no questions, then we will move to the Green's function for wave equation. Now we consider inhomogeneous case with the non-zero right-hand side. Green's function for wave equation. So it satisfies the following equation: nabla squared g of x minus psi t minus tau minus 1 over c squared. So this nabla acts on x, d squared d tau squared g x minus psi comma t minus tau. And in the right-hand side, we have delta of x minus psi delta t minus tau. So again, we Fourier expand both sides. Fourier expand. Let me write down just the Fourier expansion for the Green function itself. Integral over the whole space, dk over 2 pi n power d. Then integral from minus infinity to plus infinity, d omega over 2 pi, gk omega, e in power minus I k dot x minus psi e in power minus I omega t minus tau. So and if you Fourier transform just delta functions, you will get one. So our equation that determines g of k omega will be given by the following construction: minus k, so squared plus omega squared divided by c squared equal to 1. From this, it follows that g k omega will be just equal to c squared divided by omega squared minus c squared k squared. Very good. Very good. So if we look at this Fourier component of Green's function, then we will see that it has two poles. And the poles are real because our equation does not contain anything imaginary. So this may ask, may call for some questions. Namely, how are we going to calculate the original Green's function in the real space and time? How should we treat those poles? And there are, so the prescription how to treat those poles is not unique. Here comes the question, what kind of Green's function we're interested in? Is it causal, anti-causal, or something in between? So because physically the Green's function is a response, then we must try to construct the causal Green's function. Meaning that first we have applied perturbation F, then we have the response. So our field must be a response to external influence, given, encoded by function F. So in this case, we must enforce causality by hand. We could, of course, construct anti-causal Green's functions. In this case, we should use the other prescription. But we will be interested only in the causal Green's function. And to enforce causality, we substitute omega by omega plus I epsilon. This will shift the poles into the lower plane. So if this is the complex plane omega, then initially we had the poles here, like on the real axis. But by adding infinitesimal I epsilon, the poles are slightly infinitesimally shifted in the lower plane. So if we have to close the contour in the upper plane, then we will get zero. If we close the contour in the lower plane, then we will get some finite contribution. So for the heat equation, we didn't have to worry about it because the pole was automatically in the lower plane. So our heat the Green's function for the heat equation was causal automatically. Here, we have to take care of this by hand.
So if you're doing omega goes to omega plus I epsilon, you're actually shifting the pole to the upper plane, right?
No, why? So if you have y plus I epsilon squared equal to c squared k squared, so the poles will be minus plus minus ck, right? Minus I epsilon. Yeah, minus I epsilon, exactly. just right here. These are the poles. These are the poles, and doing the integral over omega, we calculate taking the residues at these poles. This is very similar to what we did for the damped harmonic oscillator. The calculations are pretty much similar. Okay, yeah. And I will write the integral from minus infinity to infinity, d omega divided by 2 pi, c squared divided by omega plus I epsilon squared minus c squared k squared, e in power minus I omega t minus tau. So when t minus tau is smaller than zero, then we have to close the contour in the upper plane and get zero. And if t minus tau is greater than zero, then we are closing the contour in the lower plane. And as a result, get the following: minus I c squared divided by 2 ck times e in power minus I c k t minus tau minus e I c k t minus tau times the theta function that reflects the situation I have just mentioned. Or we can rewrite this minus, when you're doing those calculations, which should be very accurate with the science. So minus theta function of t minus tau times c, and here we have sine c k t minus tau divided by k. So this is the result of doing integration over frequencies. If we substitute this result into the formula written above, then we will get g of x minus xi comma t minus tau equal to minus theta of t minus tau integral over k space dk divided by 2 pi n power d e minus I k dot x minus xi times c sine ck t minus tau divided by k. This is our final answer. For causal Green's function for d dimensional wave equation. Any questions at this point?
Yeah. Can you explain again why you took the poles down, for example, and not up?
So why did I add I epsilon rather than minus I epsilon? Well, because I'm considering the problem in which the field is determined by external function f at earlier time. So basically I am assuming the situation in which we have some kind of initial conditions and time running in the positive direction. We could also
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does introducing this little complex part not affect the final result? And if so, why can't you introduce like a larger part? Why does that have to be in the test? Like, are we taking epsilon going to zero?
Yeah, we're taking epsilon going to zero. This is their trick that is used quite often. Quite often, because in many problems, Green's functions contain poles on the real axis. And we have to some kind of procedure, to have some kind of procedure beyond the rigorous mathematics, how to deal with those poles. At the point when I wrote those exponents. So I simply, the expression for omega contains I epsilon, and so it enters the exponent, and I took the limit epsilon going to zero. So note that this expression, you have sine ck times t minus tau divided by k, this expression is absolutely regular at point k equal to zero. So taking the limit epsilon going to zero is not expected to cause us any troubles in subsequent calculations. That's also important. Yeah, Daniel, you wanted to ask something.
It was a similar question.
A similar question. Yes. That's
very, very, very important. Okay. Then looking at this expression, we can ask a question. Can we do better? Can we say integration over k? And the answer is yes, we can. We can, but in this case, the answer will depend strongly on dimensionality of our problem. What I will do now, I will consider the situation when we solve the wave equation in three dimensions. And I will show you that something magical happens exactly in three dimensions. So Green's function in three dimensions. So in three dimensions, well, actually it is in any dimension, we can try to take the integral with respect to k. So here, d equal to 3. Here we have the scalar product. So we will switch to the spherical coordinates and presume that z axis in k space corresponds to the direction of x minus xi. So we have g of x minus xi, comma t minus tau. And write this as follows: minus equal to minus theta of t minus tau, integral from 0 to infinity over the absolute value of k. Here we write 2 pi k squared dk divided by 2 pi cubed, then integral over angle theta, the angle in spherical coordinates, sine theta d theta, and our integrand I, so e in power minus I k times absolute value of the vector x minus xi cosine theta and times this c sine c k t minus tau divided by k. Good. We can take the integral over theta. Does everyone understand going to spherical coordinate system? So during the tutorial, you will use the similar trick calculating the Green's function of Helmholtz operator. So we integrate over theta. So this is minus d of cosine theta. And we straightforwardly take the integral. So this integration over angular variables is convenient essentially only in three dimensions. So we have the following. Let me start writing here because the expressions may be a bit cumbersome. Minus theta of t minus tau integral from 0 to infinity k squared dk divided by 4 pi squared. And here we have 1 divided by minus I k x minus xi times e in power minus I k times absolute value of vector x minus xi minus e in power I k absolute value of x minus xi. This one, I should have moved this expression a little bit down. But anyway, that's good. Times c sine c k t minus tau divided by k. Okay, so this is equal to this when we took the integration over theta. And yeah, any questions? And going forward, so we write minus theta. Okay. We write minus theta of t minus tau divided by x absolute value of the vector x minus xi integral from 0 to infinity. And note the very interesting thing. This k squared cancels with k's in denominators. This is the artifact of the three-dimensional case only. In any other dimension, this won't occur. So we write, we can take this absolute value of x minus xi out of the integrand, and then write what remains in the form. Dk divided by 2 pi squared times c sine k x minus xi times sine ck times t minus tau. Very good. So this is just the result of integration over theta, the angular variable. Now the question is, what should we do with this integral? The integral is very particular. It is the integral over dk from 0 to infinity and contains the product of two sides. So the question is how to compute this integral that is presumably not very well determined. Is it going to be expressed through delta functions or via something else? And before I move, let me as a side think, do the following. on the other board. So, yeah, it's very sad that I have only one colored chalk today somehow, only white chalks are left. So, no, I need the colored one, so. Yeah, there are plenty of white chalks, so. Remember the formula for the delta function, delta of x, expressed as a Fourier transform. Delta of x equal to integral minus infinity to plus infinity e in power I k x dk divided by 2 pi equal to. So this e in power I k x, well, what's this? This is cosine k x plus I sine kx, right? So if we look at the integrand sine kx, then we will see that this is an odd function, and we're taking the integral from minus infinity to infinity. So we can write equivalently that delta function can be expressed only through cosine of k of x. So it is the integral from minus infinity to infinity, cosine kx dk divided by 2 pi. Good. Good. So then the question is, can we express this integral somehow through delta functions? But there is the problem. That we have here the integral from 0 to infinity. And this delta function contains the integral from minus infinity to infinity. But if we look at our integral, we will notice that we can extend the integration from our initial integration from 0 to infinity to the integral from minus infinity to infinity. So we write y, because what stands there is an even function of k. So we write 0 to infinity sine k x minus psi times sine c k t minus tau dk equal to 1/2 integral minus infinity plus infinity sine k x minus psi times sine ck t minus tau dk. Right? And then express the product of sines as the difference of cosine of sum of these two arguments and the cosine of difference of these two arguments. So this is equal to 1/4 integral minus infinity to infinity cosine of kx minus psi minus ck t minus tau minus cosine k x minus tau plus ck t minus tau dk. And if we compare this expression with the representation of delta function via cosine, we get the following, equal to pi over 2 times delta of x minus xi, delta of absolute value of x minus xi minus c t minus tau plus delta x minus xi plus c t minus tau. Any questions here? Any questions how I managed to obtain this expression that contains two delta functions?
When transforming the product of sines into some
actually minus
sines.
Right. So two sines, cosine, sine, minus, not here minus. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Very good, minus. So we have two delta functions. A question, do we need all of them? Just.
Yeah, but because we already have theta functions here and we have that t minus tau must be greater than zero, then this means that because t minus tau is always greater than zero, and we have here absolute value, we in fact see that if we substitute into that expression for the Green's functions, this delta function will be always zero because t minus tau is greater than zero. Will be zero because t minus tau is greater than zero. So in order to get the final expression for the Green's function in three dimensions, we need only one delta function, this one. Oh, if t equals tau, then we potentially have trouble. Let's assume that t is never equal to tau. When we look at the expression, I will write in a moment, then we will understand that it is better to assume that this never happens. Yeah.
Anyway, if I remember correctly, I think that the theta function is defined to be only one strictly if t is bigger than tau, not.
So Pd, concerning theta function, people often assume that when the argument of theta function is zero, then the theta function is equal to 1/2. But sometimes I saw the situation when people assume that theta function is equal to any number between zero and one. So strictly, but most often they assume that it is equal to 1/2. Yeah.
When you want to evaluate your phi, then you wind up integrating your Green's function from minus infinity t equals minus infinity t equals infinity. So you probably will cross t equals tau.
I will explain. Okay, I will just explain in a couple of more moments. So. Yeah.
Maybe a very stupid question, but I can't see why in the right-hand expression t is less than tau.
here. Here t is greater than, we must have a t greater than tau.
Why does that go to zero
then? Well, why delta function goes to zero? So when the argument of delta function is never zero, then delta function itself is zero. So because the absolute value of x minus xi is positive, and c times t minus tau is positive. Yeah, because in our Green's function, we cannot have, we already took into account what stands there. So this delta function is zero, and we take this expression and substitute into this formula. So gathering all together, we will have g of x minus xi comma t minus tau equal to minus theta t minus tau divided by 4 pi times absolute value of x minus xi times delta function of x minus xi minus c t minus tau. This is our Green's function in three dimensions. In d equal to 3. So what we should do next? We should substitute this Green's function into the formula that determines phi and look at our expression. C, yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, yeah, I forgot C is important, of course. Very, very good. So then we can write that phi of x comma t is equal to minus integral over the whole space d psi. Then because we have causal Green's functions, we must have the tau is smaller than t, then the integral with respect to time is from minus infinity to t d tau. Then delta function x minus xi minus c t minus tau. And times we have c times f of xi comma tau divided by 4 pi x minus xi. Here tau. So finally, we can do one more simplification. We can eliminate this delta function as a result of integration over d tau. by doing this, we right. So the argument of the delta function is equal to zero when c when t minus tau equal to absolute value of x minus xi divided by c. Right. So in fact, we can substitute instead of tau some kind of the so-called retarded moment of time. It is denoted as tr. Tr equal to t minus x minus xi divided by c. So eliminating delta function, we have minus 1 over 4 pi, or that to say c over 4 pi, very good. So integral over whole space d xi f of xi comma tr divided by x minus xi, where tr is equal to t minus x minus xi divided by c. So this is, in fact, the formula for the famous retarded solution. Sorry? Yeah, the special, yeah, R3, of course, absolutely right. Yeah, very, very good. This is just, over R3, because we are considering every three-dimensional case, yeah. So the integral over xi will remain. But an interesting thing is that this time variable in the function of f will contain also xi as a parameter. So in practice, doing such integrals is not easy. Now, so concerning your question, what may happen if tau is equal to t? So if tau is equal to t, then we substituted instead of tau tr, then we must also have that x minus xi is equal to zero, and x minus xi is in denominator. So unless there is some kind of a particular form of function f, then having zero in denominator in three dimensions may not be a big trouble because it's an integrable singularity, but in other dimensions, this may cause potential trouble in lower dimensional situations. So we should assume that t is greater than tau. It can be more or less close to tau, but in three dimensions, things are tractable. But in lower dimensional, for example, in lower dimensional electrodynamics, things may be problematic. That's all I can say. Yeah.
Does this term over here make it okay? Like if t is tau over here, this whole thing is here, right?
Because zero.
We have the same delta function. Mm-hmm. So that should make this not an issue.
To make it zero.
So it's zero anyway.
When t is equal to tau. Well, here a good point, but here you have the difference of two delta functions that are themselves infinite. You see here if t equal to tau, then you subtract one infinity from the other, and I don't know how well mathematically this thing is defined. You see?
T equals to tau, you just have the delta of x minus xi modulus, so that'll just go to zero.
Well, I don't know from a mathematical point of view how or what may ensue here. From this integrand, if t minus tau is equal to zero, then the integrand is zero. But again, if you look at this expression, it's not very well defined thing, because if you plug directly t minus tau equal to zero, then the integrand is zero and formally everything is zero. But if you deviate slightly from t equal to tau, then the integral will be infinite because it will contain delta function. So yeah, so it's difficult for me to explain from a more mathematical points of view what's going on here. You understand what I am saying. So in fact, it's a special type of mathematical construction. So if t minus tau is zero, the integral is zero, and if it deviates from this, then it automatically becomes infinite.
So what does t minus tau mean physically?
Huh?
Does
it mean
that we have a?
It's minus c over c. It's minus c over c. That's what it means.
No,
that's tr.
That's tr. I simply here eliminated delta function.
Basically, time has passed.
It's x equals psi, which is actually good that we can kind of exclude that one, because that's like one bit of the singularity.
X and t is your field point where you're trying to find phi.
X and t is the field point, yes.
Tau are your source point.
Yeah, at the source point. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so probably if we have t minus tau equals 0, then it just means that we haven't moved away from
the source.
Yeah.
Time hasn't passed, so it should not give us any evolution.
It should give us
zero. If we also look at that equation there, if you just plug in t minus tau, that will give c into zero.
Yeah.
So, and delta of any positive number is zero, so it should give us zero.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think it's all good. I think the big red, you have t minus tau, and you're going to cancel out.
Okay, I will consider just one last topic during next 10-12 minutes, I will be very, very brief. Simply, I will remind you of Maxwell equations and see how this machinery works when we try to solve the equation for the scalar and vector potential in electrodynamics, when we have possibly charges and currents that evolve in time. Since I have only 10 minutes, so I will be quite quick. So Maxwell's equations. These are the equations that contain nabla and acting as divergence and curl on electric and magnetic fields. So nabla cross beta minus dE over dt equal to 4 pi j, and nabla cross E plus dB over dt equal to 0. So this is the equation one, typically how people are. This is the second equation. These two equations comprise one pair of Maxwell equations, and the other pair looks like this. Nabla dot E equal to 4 pi rho, and nabla dot B equal to 0. So these are the equations of 3 and 4 respectively. So J is the current density and rho is the charge density. So typically, this system of equations is solved when we introduce the so-called scalar and vector potential. So from this equation, we can, because this equation always holds, we can claim that B is equal to nabla cross A. So there, this is because nabla dot acting on something that contains nabla cross is always equal to zero. Better to say that the divergence of any curl is always zero. And we also introduce the scalar potential from this second equation. To ensure that it is satisfied, we write E plus dA over dt equal to minus nabla acting on theta. So A, no, not theta by phi, sorry. A and phi are vector and scalar potentials. Potentials. Good. So those potentials are not determined uniquely because they contain the so-called gauge redundancy. One can have all the equations in place if. So one second. Let me go to here. So B and E are invariant under the substitution phi going to phi plus d lambda over dt, and A plus A going to A plus nabla acting on lambda, where lambda is an arbitrary function of space and time. So we can use this gauge freedom to determine the potentials uniquely. So this is the so-called imposition of gauge condition. We can use the arbitrary function to impose the so-called Lorentz gauge. Namely, d phi over dt plus nabla acting on A equal to zero. And when we do this, we substitute the expressions for B and E expressed through vector and scalar potential into, say, first equation three. So substituting into three, we just have nabla acting on minus nabla phi minus dA over dt equal to 4 pi rho. But nabla acting on A is nothing else than minus d phi over dt. Nabla acting d A over dt equal to minus d squared phi over dt squared. Right?
Since.
30, thank you, yeah. Yeah. So it's just since, nabla acting, I'm simply trying to cover last piece of material and I have only 3-4 minutes left. So since nabla acting on dA over dt equal to minus d squared phi over dt squared, from this Lorentz gauge, we have the equation nabla squared minus d2 pi over dt squared equal to minus 4 pi rho. Yeah. Multiplying by minus both sides, we have this equation. So this is the equation one that determines the evolution of the scalar potential. So rho can be the function of both space and time. And finally, we obtain the equation 4a. So actually, I don't have time to present the derivation and ask you to do this as an exercise. Just an exercise using the fact that nabla cross acting nabla cross A. So a very interesting construction. This is the vector that contains nabla cross B. This is basically curl of A. And we're taking the curl for the second time. Using this, the expression that this is equal to nabla dot nabla dot A minus nabla squared A, that this is the Laplace operator, show that A obeys the following equation, nabla squared A minus d squared A divided by dt squared equal to minus 4 pi j. So we have two equations for scalar and vector potential that have the same structure, namely the structure of inhomogeneous wave equation. J and rho can be the functions of time, and we can straightforwardly write down the expressions for the scale and vector potential in a way as we wrote above. So we are going to have that from this, it follows that phi of x and t phi of x and t and a of x and t are equal. Oh, for the presence of 4 pi is very convenient. And the minus sign are equal to c times the integral over r3 dx psi divided by x minus psi. So, and here we have just the densities, rho of x comma tr or j of x comma tr, where tr is equal to t minus x minus psi divided by c. So this is the famous formula for retarded potentials in classical electrodynamics. Unfortunately, I didn't have much time to elaborate on this. There are quite many applications. So if you took the course in classical electrodynamics, then probably you had quite many problems related to specific motion of charges and current, where you are asked to calculate the expressions for vector and scalar potentials and then differentiate them to extract the formulas for electric and magnetic fields. So this is a very huge area of classical electrodynamics. For example, if you know, Jackson's book contains many problems related to how to do the integration in such cases. It is not easy. So any questions? OK, if there are no questions, thank you very much for your attention. Thank you.